You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the Tomahawk Nation Hoops dedicated podcast, although I have a feeling, Michael, on this one we will be discussing more than just FSU basketball or college basketball. I am Matt Minnick coming to you here. It is Friday the 13th, and I'm joined by Michael Rogner as always. You know, this we had kind of sketched out a pod schedule that had, you know, we were some big plans in terms of hopefully doing a Saturday podcast previewing the ACC championship, which we both had projected Florida State to be in, a Selection Sunday one reacting to the draw that Florida State probably in all likelihood receiving a 2 seed for the first time in program history, and then of course a series of podcasts around each of the quadrants of the bracket and projecting forward in FSU's path. As pretty much anybody listening to this knows by now, none of that is going to take place thanks to COVID-19 and the reactions to it. So with the season's over, Michael, and I guess maybe it's first appropriate to reflect back and think about the season that was. So other than the tournament being canceled, what will be your lasting memories of the actual basketball that was played in the 2019-20 season for Florida State?
That's a hard thing to wrap your head around right now, because we should be prepping for the semifinals right now, the ACC tournament semifinals, which would be happening at 7 o'clock tonight. You know, probably a Florida State Duke rematch, you know, from the game where we played them in Cameron. You know, and now we're just, it's like the rug has been yanked, you know, not to make light of the situation, but this is probably a little bit how Virginia fans felt when they lost to a 16 seed. It's like, holy cow, the season's over, you know, now what? And we're kind of, you know, trying to look retrospectively at this team. And I think that the way that I sort of classify this team is right there with last year's team. Like, I think the two best Florida State teams in Leonard Hamilton's tenure are this year and last year. Last year got a little derailed in the tournament by injuries and personal tragedy. This year's team got completely derailed by, you know, the coronavirus thing. There's a little bit of an argument maybe for the 2012 team, but I don't think that team had enough offense to really qualify with the last 2 year team. So, you know, when I look back on the season, you know, it's you know, a shame how it ended, but it was a really fun ride once we got past that first game. You know, we came out of the gate and lose to Pitt. We're like, oh great, here we go, and then they reel off like 17 of the next 18 or something, and it was a super fun ride up until the end. And you know, this you know, definitely could be, you know, one the best Florida State team in most of our lifetimes. You know, certainly the highest ranked and the highest seeded. So yeah, it was a special year, and it just really sucks that it, you know, it kind of ends this way, especially for the seniors on the team.
Yeah, I think that's an appropriate summation. It really sucks, you know. I don't know that there's a lot else to add, but thinking about the teams, as you said, the 2018 team, so that's the Elite Eight team, not at the end of the year, they were playing some of the best basketball that I've seen a Florida State team play. They really handled, you know, Missouri there in the first round and, you know, handled them pretty easily, to be honest. And then upset a number one team and then dominated Gonzaga, albeit Gonzaga did have an injury in that game to Killian Tilly. But the last 2 years, so 2019 and 2020, you've sort of seen that level of play, not just in, you know, one or two game spurts, but throughout a season, particularly last year, but throughout the year. And on top of that, this year you saw a team that was arguably playing some of its best ball down the stretch. I know that the Syracuse game, for example, the Syracuse team that just whitewashed UNC in the ACC tournament, Florida State plays that game without Devin Vassell and still wins. That they were up, you know, double digits at for a large portion of the game, and the score ended up being three, but still wins despite a pretty good shooting performance by Syracuse. Florida State travels to Cameron and frankly plays bad basketball, just did not shoot well right there in the game at the end. And so, you know, that comeback against Notre Dame, against a Notre Dame team that was shooting pretty well, that's a difficult arena to play in. They took a few punches, stood there, and then, wow, really came back. And, of course, the Louisville games. So, yeah, I do think that this might have been the best team in the Leonard Hamilton era. I think that you're right to at least mention the 2012 team. I know the 2000 and I think 17 that didn't make the NCAA tournament. They finished top 35 in the country on KenPom. They had basically, if you remove the stretch where Tony Douglas broke his hand and we lost five games in a row, they were 22-8, I guess, with Tony Douglas in the lineup. In an ACC that was pretty darn good. They won in Cameron. So I think that team should at least not be lost totally in the shuffle, but this was a really good team. And let me get your thoughts real quick on a couple of stats compared to last year's team. So I'm not going to mention ranks because the ranks are obviously dependent on the rest of the landscape of college basketball, but last year's team had a 112.8 adjusted offensive rating for their, you know, schedule and tempo. This year's team had a 111.7. So last year's team maybe was slightly just adjusted efficiency, slightly better on offense. But the effective field goal percentage of this team was actually, 1.5% better. Turnovers were identical, ironically, 18.9% of possessions. This team was a better offensive rebounding team despite losing Fiondu Cabangeli and Chris Kamaji. So they rebounded 33.5% of their misses. Last year was 32.8. This team rebounded better. This team shot twos better than last year's team. This team was 2 percentage points from three better. And that, mind you, is despite a longer three-point line, right? An increased distance from the three-point line. This team was 2 percentage points better from three. The only thing this team really didn't do as well as last year was get to the free throw line, and that was significantly less. So thinking about this year's offense versus last year's offense, what do you make of the two teams?
Well, I thought that this year's was much more explosive, primarily because of their ability to force live ball turnovers, and then their ability to shoot the three. You know, those are you put those two things together and you can put on a lot of, 12-0 runs and, 15-2 runs, during the course of the year. The thing that you mentioned about free throws, that's definitely significant. You know, the free throws are the most efficient place to score on the college basketball court or on any basketball court. And last year's team was really good at getting to the line. You know, Fiondu was good at it. Terrence Mann.
Yeah.
Even Trent Forrest was, better last year getting to the line than he was this year. And we've talked about that on previous pods. We don't need to go into that. But that was the significant difference. And it was so significant that I would probably, you know, kind of lump this year's offense and last year's offense, you know, basically into the same category. This year's, I think, was a little more fun to watch. You know, teams that are forcing a lot of turnovers, and you know that leads to, you know, exciting plays. And this year's team was sort of full of those exciting plays, whereas last year's team was a little more workmanlike. But they did because they got to the line so often. You know, they were able to score at, you know, just as an efficient or maybe even more efficient, you know, level than this year's team. So, you know, if we, you know, end up talking about next year's team, that how often we go to the free throw line is, you know, should be a key thing that the coaches are working on and talking about.
Yeah, no, the free throw rate is significantly down, right? I mean, it's greater than 5% percentage points down, which when you're talking about, then, I mean, that's, so it's I can do the quick math of 5 percentage points on 35 here is, so what is that? It's a 14% drop. So that's a significant drop. You know, we don't really know the data yet. I'll be interested to see some of how that plays out with the increased 3-point line. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything there or not. I do wonder, and we'll never know the answer to this. Last year's team was bad at shooting threes to begin with. It was 33%, 232nd in the country. I wonder if they played in this year's court, this year's dimensions, would that have been even worse? I don't know. Would teams have really just said, F it, we're going to pack it in, and they're going to shoot 31-32% from three, similar to defending Virginia this year. And just say that we don't think they can beat us like that. That's a question we'll never know. But to your point about the turnovers, I'm glad you said it because I was going there next. Yeah, this year's team, so it will finish the year with, you know, forcing turnovers 23.7% of the opponent's possessions, right? So almost a full quarter of the opponent's possessions. That is the most since the 2010 team, which was also the most for Florida State since the 2010 team, which also directly, which ironically finished at 23.7, the exact same amount. That was in a very different era of basketball, and that Florida State team actually finished second in the country for adjusted defense. What that Florida State team did not do was they were not able to shoot, and they weren't able to value the basketball. They themselves had more than a 22% turnover rate, whereas this year's team was only 18.9, which is why this year's team is a lot better than the 2010 team, despite the same turnover rate being generated on defense. You combine that with our block percentage of 15.9, which last year's was 12.7. So this year's was fourth in the country, 15.9. And like you said, those blocks and turnovers that were leading to steals were extremely explosive basketball. It reminded me of those Duke teams maybe a decade ago that it was a 58-57 game, and you went up to get another beer and you walk back and the Cameron Crazies are going bonkers, and it's a 12-0 run, and they're up 11, you know? So you're like, what just happened? And that was what sort of Florida State was capable of doing this year. So do you think that the defense this year, thinking about this year versus last year, would they have actually been able to – like, which team would you say – like, if both of them are fully healthy, which team wins?
Oh, man. That is a tough one. A lot of those same guys are obviously on both teams, but they're a year older on this year's team.
And Patrick Williams is a defensive difference maker.
Right, but we lose Fiondu, and Cabangeli, and you know, all those other guys that last year's team lost. You know, honestly, this is one. I bet you could watch these teams go at each other all day long, and there's just not going to be a lot of separation. They're very different teams, which is kind of surprising to see. You know, this basically the same players. Or at least a lot of the, you know, more than half the team is the same players, you know, going from one year to the next, and it's very different, style of game, even though they're playing the same offense, they're playing the same defense. You just put in different skill sets, and you're seeing a very interesting and different game. I would probably, if you held a gun to my head and forced me to pick, I would probably take this year's team, just because Trent's a senior, and it's at some point we saw it in several games this year, like at the end of a close game, he just took over. And maybe last year he was deferring a little bit to Terrence Mann and Fiondu and other folks, but this year he was a bad dude coming down the final seconds or final minutes of a close game. And I think he'll be the difference maker in my little fantasy world when these two teams play each other.
I can't blame you at all. It's hard for me sometimes to think about last year's team, and I forget that Trent played most of the season on a toe that ultimately required surgery, and he played through that pain. We're talking about a gritty, tough, badass, right? That's Trent Forrest. He's a gritty, tough badass who essentially played the sport of basketball, a sport that requires constant explosion and change of direction on a big toe that required surgery. So it's hard sometimes for me to, you think about like, oh, well, fully healthy last year. I don't even know what fully healthy last year looked like. Maybe the destruction of UF. I don't know. But I also agree with you that this year there was something different about Trent's confidence, whether it was his willingness to step out and shoot threes and even make some in some big spots. I feel like, didn't he have a three there in the Louisville game? So that was a difference maker for me. And I also think MJ Walker, the MJ Walker that we saw this year is just a totally different basketball player from the MJ Walker of last year. Vassell was a good shooter. Like Vassell sent the Virginia Tech game into overtime with a dagger corner three. And then Terrence Mann, of course, made the bucket at the buzzer to send Florida State on to the next round in last year's ACC tournament. Vassell essentially just had more playing time this year. And of course, his defense, his awareness improved, but he just had more playing time. And that dude can flat out shoot the rock. But MJ Walker turned into just a different player. And I think his jump was so much combined with Trent's confidence that I'm with you. I think that I would probably take this team. I know last year set a school record with 29 wins. I don't realistically see a world in which this year's team didn't match that 29 or probably exceed it. I'm thinking a win over Clemson, maybe a win over Duke. Let's call it that too. And then, a first round win over the 15 seed, probably a second round win in the NCAA tournament. That's 30. Already. So yeah, I think I'm all that is to say, I think I'd love to see the matchup, but you're probably right that I think I would take this year's, which maybe drives home the point even more that it's a shame we won't know the outcome. And I of course can't imagine what guys like Trent Forrest on the team are going through who don't have next year. But some of these guys do have next year. So let's maybe look forward and talk about that. You just mentioned how it's incredible what Leonard Hamilton and Stan Jones were able to do going from the style of last year to the style of this year, largely with similar people. What do you think is next year closer to this year or closer to 2019?
I think, well, we're going to see more growing pains next year just because Trent's not on the team. We've obviously got Scotty Barnes coming in, who's the highest rated recruit ever since Doug Edwards, which, they didn't even have good recruiting rankings back then. So who knows what two really meant back then. So that is going to be a change. You've got a very high level freshman who's going to be, it's going to be kind of ball dominant there. And there's going to be some growth issues. It'll be, depending on who comes back, it'll be a better shooting team. So I think that we could see, kind of a version of this year's offense, but making more threes, which is really fun to think about. Sadar Calhoun is a legit shooter. I mean, he's taking something like, you know, 8 or 9 threes per game for the last 2 years and is making 45-46%. That guy is going to be a legit scorer in the ACC. And then, you know, Anthony Polite showed tremendous growth this year. MJ Walker, as you mentioned, and he's really been shooting the ball well lately when he's healthy, which you know, bodes well for next year. Raekwon Evans shot the ball well, just not often. Wyatt Wilkes shot the ball well, especially as the season went on. Malik Osborne. I mean, we got a bunch of shooters next year. And so I think that the ability to spread the court a little more, which we kind of were able to do this year, but certain teams certainly shrunk it down against Florida State and forced them to shoot. So I think with that, we could see a really fun offense next year, depending on how well Scotty Barnes plays, and how quickly he adjusts to the college game. And then the wild card is who comes back. You know, I think Patrick Williams and Devin Vassell, you know, there's probably a pretty good chance that neither of those guys are here next year. And then, you know, who knows about someone like MJ Walker. You know, he's 22. He might be wanting to get his career started. You know, he's not going to get drafted, but you know, you never know what decisions people are going to make on what path they're going to take to their professional game. And then, you know, assuming Vassell and Williams are gone, then we've got two more scholarships or three more scholarships available. So that's there's going to be more faces on this team that we don't know about just yet, you know, probably in the grad transfers, or maybe they'll take a long shot or a project guy to add to this team, you know, who knows. So there's going to be new faces, you know, but what we know is coming back is going to be a really good shooting team.
I think the jump that MJ Walker made this year has me really encouraged about the jump that Anthony Polite can make next year. A guy that we really didn't even mention was Wyatt Wilkes. I don't know. I feel like we watched his confidence grow right before us, and I do think there's games during the season. There are certain games and certain opponents that he can play for 12 minutes or 15, you know, minutes and shoot threes. Calhoun's absolutely going to take some of those, I think, shots away from Wyatt. But by the same token, he'll also open up shots for everybody else because, as you said it, Calhoun is an absolute floor stretcher. I mean, he can shoot. And I do feel like that you're right. In the beginning of the year, I don't think we're going to start 16-1 or 2, whatever we started this year, because you don't have that leadership from Trent. Let's not forget that Trent's seasons at Florida State ended with 26 wins, 23 wins, 29 wins, and now 26 wins in a shortened season. That is pretty remarkable. But, you know, we see teams like Kentucky and Hamilton and Calipari are both, neither one of them are given enough credit for developing players, both from season to season and also within a basketball season. I mean, I know a lot of folks used to ride Calipari for, oh, just roll the ball out there with your talent. But when you look at such seasons like Roy Williams had this year with UNC, I think it really gives a new perspective on what John Calipari's been able to do. And you see those teams maybe start off with some losses and then grow into themselves and sort of turn into, you know, he's made the Elite Eight 7 or 8 times since he's been at Kentucky. So turn into this monster in March and where the talent sort of meets the folks being ready to play with each other. You saw that with Virginia this year. I think Virginia started off very, you know, they lost a lot of talent to the NBA, started off, you know, pretty – it didn't even look like they were going to make the tournament. And Tony has kind of coalesced them into a group that was playing as good as basketball as anybody down the stretch. So, Yeah, I think that fans may need to, you know, this year we were saying, God, if we can just start 1-1, if we can just start 1-1 with that Pitt and UF game, and we ended up doing that, although maybe it was the opposite result that many expected, we thought, well, we really could have a chance there to kind of sweep through the rest of the out-of-conference season, just looking at the schedule and looking at the team that we have. I remember you and I talking about, like, you start 1-1, you could end up going into ACC play with maybe one or two losses. And next year, I don't know that that's going to be possible, but we could be as good of a team or better come late February. I want to then – so you mentioned the people leaving. Because you're right, we don't know who the new faces are going to be. Hamilton always has a trick up his sleeve. Naheem McLeod or McLeod, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but the guy who was recruited last year and sat out with some eligibility reasons, he could come in and be that kind of defensive rim protector. But – if you're Pat Williams, if you are MJ Walker, if you're somebody in college basketball who doesn't know that they are going to be a first-round draft pick, right? They're not a surefire lottery pick. It seems uncertain right now that you'd want to go somewhere overseas, go play in China, right? I mean, at this point, Chinese basketball has been since we don't even know what's going on there. So it seems uncertain you'd want to go play in China. Seems uncertain you'd want to go play in Italy. And given that the NBA draft process is now pushed back, we don't know whether there will even be an NBA combine. We don't know what kind of data the college players are going to be receiving from the NBA or the timeline on that. And they've now lost that opportunity to use the NCAA tournament as a launching pad, which every year is a launching pad for people. Last year, Fiondu Cabangeli had promises made by NBA teams based off his performance in the Murray State game when there were three dozen scouts there watching Ja Morant. So the NCAA tournament is a launch pad for these folks. What does this change the math for you if you are 18-year-old Patrick Williams? Does it change the math for you if you're 22-year-old MJ Walker, who probably is going to have to prove himself in the G League or maybe overseas, you know, versus coming back to school for one more year? A school that, by the way, you don't know for sure if the college basketball season is even going to start on time. But
I feel like we're back 4 or 5 years ago, you know, where players were not getting good direction from the NBA, and they've made some rule changes since then to make sure that players have much more and better information, and they can go back, they can change their mind and go back to school, et cetera, et cetera. Now all that's out the window. I mean, how much information is Pat going to have from NBA teams? You know, he's certainly been scouted during the season because he was on the radar from the beginning. But it's not like he was a top 10 prospect coming into Florida State. You know, he was in the high 20s. So even though he was on the list, he certainly wasn't on the top of the list. He has been scouted, but have they really scouted him enough to be able to peg him as a for certain first rounder? You know, who knows? I think Vassell, he's got 2 years of development. Some guys have, you know, probably watched him last year and then watched him again this year. And
he's also got a 40% shot from three. So let's exactly, throw that out there. Exactly, yeah,
right. So I think he'll probably get a little better information from the NBA, but who knows? I mean, are they going to be bringing players together to have combines at all? I mean, is
probably like, not. What is, certainly not before what, June.
Right. Yeah. So what's the path to get that information from the NBA? And then, so I think a lot of it is, you know, it's coming down to the same decision that guys were making 5 or 6 years ago when they didn't have good information. It was a era of uncertainty, and it was they just, you know, made the best choice they could. Luckily, you know, Coach Hamilton, Coach Jones have been doing this a long time. They have tons of contacts in the NBA. So it's, of all the potential first rounders out there, they're probably going to get better information than, you know, coaches like, you know, Mike White, maybe, who hasn't developed those, you know, NBA connections yet, you know, at the head coach of Florida. So they'll get some information, but who knows how much it'll be, how good it'll be. And then they'll if the NCAA season for next year was set in stone, if there were no uncertainty about it, then that would give them something to lean towards, because it is a certainty. But the way that, you know, the way that the NCAA is responding to the coronavirus thing, it makes it seem like next year's season, you know, is a total crapshoot at this point. And so I just don't know how, if you're Pat Williams, you decipher all this crap and come up with a good decision on your future. You know, it's super unfortunate for the, you know, obviously for the seniors who had their season ended, but all these players that are making multi-million dollar decisions, you know, they're making generational money decisions when they're 18, 19 years old, and there's no information for them to make the decision on. So it's going to be a tough one. It'll be interesting to see how it works out for the guys who are kind of currently projected at the bottom end of the first round, you know, like Pat Williams. So I don't know. It's a tough one.
And what do you do even then with the deadline, right? So typically, so March Madness would have happened. They, you know, Florida State makes Final Four, cuts down the nets. You know, Patrick Williams and these guys' stock soaring from this wonderful run that they go on. There's the NBA combine, there's all these things they go participate in, and then there's these deadlines, right, typically in May, where you have to announce whether you're going to school, coming back to school, or staying in the draft. And those announcements, some of those deadlines are predicated on when an NBA draft will be, which it's very, very possible that the NBA draft is not going to be held at that same time. But Some of those dates are also predicated on when do coaches need to have information about their rosters so that they can, as you mentioned, bring in the graduate transfers, so that they can add that JUCO guy or that under the radar project that they're wanting to do and stick within the 13 scholarship limit. And then, you know, summer school starts and then people have to be on, you know, people are enrolled, they're on scholarship, whatever they're doing, they're attending classes and they're staying eligible for that next season. So that is why a lot of those dates and deadlines exist. At what point though is this year that if the NCAA is truly about the student athlete and truly about allowing someone like Patrick Williams, who comes from a low-income community in West Charlotte, right? Right now he's at Florida State. He is, you know, being given good, not all world training facilities. It's not like he's with the Golden State Warriors training facilities, but he's getting good training. He's getting meals. He's getting an education. At what point do we have to say, well, it's pretty unfair to a student athlete to hold them to a deadline that they're not even sure of if the sport that they are competing in next year is going to happen. What are they committing for? And then by that, what do you do with people who you've already recruited for next year and the scholarship? I mean, I feel like there's going to have to potentially be a serious look at eligibility issues and scholarship issues that I'm not sure right now anyone's giving real thought to. I don't know. It just seems like there's a lot of uncertainty here. And unfortunately, with the track record of the NCAA, it seems like there's going to be people who are ultimately unfairly punished.
And that's the key to everything you just said is the NCAA. They're the ones. I would imagine that you and I and a couple of other people, let's pick some other podcasters from around the nation.
Sure, John Rothstein, right?
You and John and his t-shirt sales program could sit down and come up with reasonable solutions for a lot of these things. Unfortunately, the NCAA is a completely dysfunctional organization. The cancellation of the NCAA tournament is like 24 hours old now, and already there are conference commissioners coming out and blasting the NCAA for their response. Dan Gavitt, who is the vice president of the NCAA and in charge of college basketball, the commissioners are saying they haven't heard from him in weeks. Like not just yesterday or the day before, but they haven't heard from him in weeks. And
what are they blasting about, Michael?
So they have no, there is no centralized command. There is, the conferences are getting no information. You got 32 different conferences making 32 different decisions. The Big Ten, you know, comes out and announces that they're going to move forward with their tournament with fans. And the NCAA doesn't do anything, knowing that in like 30 minutes, they're going to announce that the whole thing is off or continuing without fans. Like, they're not passing on like super basic information to all of their member conferences. And it's just a total cluster. So assuming that these same guys, and there's like 15 or 16 different vice presidents of the NCAA that all make over $300,000. The head, Mark Emmert, the head of the NCAA, makes a couple million dollars. You know, these guys, we're expecting them to now make decisions that are good for student athletes like Patrick Williams when they have no track record of doing it. It's just, this whole thing is in the hands of totally incompetent people. And I kind of fear for the outcome, you know, when you are thinking about the student athletes and doing what's, you know, supposedly best for them. I would imagine on the PR sheets, the student athletes are going to be all over it. But when they're actually making real decisions, I don't think the students have much to do with it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. When you put it all out there like that, I you know, it's, you really start to. So then someone like Patrick Williams is 18 years old and being tasked with making a decision that, you know, the governing body that's over that decision, you're not even sure if it's because I will say that the NBA is going to they have suspended their games. I'm sure things are going to be postponed. I wouldn't be surprised if next year's NBA season starts a little bit later, since this year's will end sooner, but or in later. But the NBA is going to get its shit together and they're going to play basketball games. So I can say that. I don't even know where to start with the NCAA. Here's what I want to do, Michael. I want to ask you one more question about next year's team, and then we'll take a break. I think this is a great conversation. I'm going to ask you a question about next year's team. We'll take a break after that. And if folks, if you're tired of trying to wrap your head around conversations around eligibility and spring sports and all that, that we'll just we'll say at the break, go wash your hands and we'll see you later. But stick around for after the break, because I want to continue some of this conversation, the larger big picture conversation. But since we were talking about next year's team, we admitted that, hey, there's going to be some good shooters on the team. And you know what? We already know that Raekwon Gray, Anthony Polite, MJ Walker, these are good defenders too. And if either of Devin Vassell or Patrick Williams come back, and they get paired with Scottie Barnes, who is a freak show of an athlete and defender, you know, in terms of just his size and ball handling and combination of stuff. How good can, you know, let's forget the floor. I'm not talking about like, well, what should we make, you know, baseline projections, but how good can Florida State be? The odd chart came out from Bovada that had Florida State as – well, they released the opening odds to win the 2021 National Championship in basketball, assuming there's a 2021 season. Virginia topped the list. They've got the Hauser kid coming in who's fantastic. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It looks like Florida State was ninth best odds to win the National Championship next year. It goes Virginia, Gonzaga, Kansas, Kentucky, Creighton, and Baylor are tied. Michigan State and Duke are just below them. And then Florida State's by itself, right with those other top 8-10 teams. Is that reasonable for you? I mean, is Florida State a top 10 national championship contender next year?
It depends on who comes back. If one of Patrick Williams or Vassell comes back, then I think that Florida State probably isn't there. I think that Florida State is going to be right there. If neither of them come back, I think we're going to be in for a little bit more of a growing pain season. And but you know, by the end of the season, who knows? You know, whenever you're bringing in a talent like Scottie Barnes and you're surrounding him with experienced players, then you've got the ability to put together something special. I would feel a lot better about our defense at the beginning of the year, at least, if Patrick Williams or Devin Vassell was back. I think, you know, you described it well earlier with John Calipari and the development of teams. I think that specifically on the defensive end next year, that we are going to be looking at a major development curve. But, you know, we've got all the pieces. You know, Scotty Barnes is a freak, and he is committed to playing defense. You know, he's not one of these guys who's just – he's not coming in to be Anthony Edwards, you know, and put up some points and go off to the NBA. He's coming in to play. And we've got Balsa, who is a developing athletic seven-footer that could provide a little rim protection that we haven't had. And then we've got, you know, all these great athletes – you know, that are already on the team, and we just have to get Barnes and Calhoun and whoever the other new faces are up to speed. I think if one of those two comes back, I would say that that's I could live with that, you know, sort of a potential top 10 team. If neither of them come back, I think it's a bit of a stretch.
I think that's fair. I think that I'd probably rather have Pat back than to, I mean, look, Devin, love you. I want both people. Hey, let's bring it all back. Let's get the whole party back together, and then we can and just go win 35 games. I think Pat's length, I don't know. I don't know. I could hear arguments for both given Devin's three-point shooting as well. But Pat and Scotty Barnes on the wing together is a scary proposition for opposing teams' passing lanes. I'm not exactly sure where you would begin to attack that. But you're right about the curve. And here's the only thing about the growing pains. You can still be great. You can be a top 10 team in March. But if you had those growing pains getting there, you're going to be playing from maybe a 5-seed spot as opposed to a 2 or 1 seed spot. And we've seen the data on how better the path is to getting to the second weekend or the third weekend from the 1 and 2 seed spot versus from the 4 or 5 seed spot. So, you know, that's something that has to be, when you're thinking about odds of actually getting to be in position to win the national title, where you're coming from makes a difference. One of the reasons, again, why this year is disappointing, given that Florida State in all likelihood was going to be a 2-seed. It's a conversation that we'll certainly have time over the summer to delve more into, since there won't be a whole lot of other sports going on. We're going to take a quick break. And then again, if you don't want to stick around for more conversation around the eligibility stuff, fine. If you do, come back for more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so we were talking a bit about the eligibility around guys like Pat Williams who have a deadline to declare, right? They have there is an impending thing in it that they need to do for their eligibility and get some information about and make a decision. There are other athletes, Michael, who maybe they were a senior, maybe the pro's not their ultimate outcome, but they're a senior and their season was just halted halfway through or a quarter of the way through, like in baseball. Maybe their actual season, like outdoor track and field, which is an actual separate sport from indoor track and field, didn't even get started. So they now are no longer, they have not played their year of sport. Is that something that you think should be, I mean, should they be given another year? I feel like the answer for basketball is, well, you played 30 games. Sorry, you don't get a tournament. But no, Trent Forrest, you cannot come back for another year. That conversation gets a lot trickier with baseball and then a sport like track that hasn't even started, or golf with John Pack.
Yeah, I would agree that basketball, it's unfortunate the way it ended, but seniors, it's time to move on. For the spring sports, though, I can't think of a logical argument for why you wouldn't allow them to come back. I know that there's going to be, you know, baseball's already recruited like 20 guys onto the team for next year. There's going to be all kinds of scholarship issues. There's going to be, you know, who knows? But there is so much money out there for college sports that there's a way to fix this. I saw recently that some college team has three assistant coaches that all make over $1 million of a football team. It's just crazy how much money is out there for college sports. And because this is a unique kind of one-off event that's shutting those sports down, I'm not quite sure why exactly all those sports are getting shut down, but they are. This is sort of a unique one-off event. I would hope that the NCAA can get their shit together enough to figure out a solution for what's going to happen to all the seniors. You know, some of them won't want to come back. That's fine. But the ones that do want to come back, you know, baseball has basically played, I think, 17 games. You know, that's right on the line of where they could all get a red shirt anyway. You know, because they didn't play more than 30% or whatever of the games. So I don't think that there is a good argument for not allowing the seniors another year of eligibility. It just goes back to the little rant earlier about the NCAA. I have zero faith that they're going to make a good decision on this. You know, maybe they'll flip a coin and get it right. But I'm not holding out hope that there's going to be a great solution to all of this.
Yeah, I'm with you in that I think perhaps the thing for me that's been hardest to grasp out of all of this is that the things that are happening in June have been canceled as opposed to postponed. You know, we've seen things like the NBA and MLS and NHL and the PGA, they've, you know, postponed event, like the Masters is postponed, and, you know, the NBA season is suspended but not canceled. I'm not quite sure I understand why the College World Series is canceled, given that it starts June 20th. It's in a stadium that's only used for the College World Series. It's not like it's a stadium that is, you know, some other team's entity. So, and you know, we don't know. We just don't know what this virus and situation will look like in April. Like, what if there's testing that's been contained? And it seems like you could review on April 15th, what are you going to do with something that's happening on June 20th? And then make a decision from there with more information. So I don't know. And then to your point, that gives me less confidence that the governing body is going to make the right decision for the student athletes that they are supposedly supposed to be serving, that they're actually going to make the decision that's in the best interest of those student athletes. Because again, they just made a decision to cancel something that takes place 4 months from now, and we're not even sure, you know, what the outcome is going to be there. So, like, if you were the NCAA, would you? Yeah. So it sounds like you're saying, just hey, next year we'll find a way to be creative with some of the scholarship issues. If, like you said, some people are just going to want to. Some people are the backup, and they just want to go and start their life and get a job. That's fine. I myself had an indoor season of track eligibility left when I was in college. I had been injured in indoor season, but I competed that same outdoor season. So I could have come back and I could have gone to college one more year and then started a grad degree or something just for an indoor season. That didn't make the most sense for me. I just went and started my career. So not everybody's going to want to come back and play. Also, keep in mind that a lot of these baseball players, golfers, lacrosse players, they're on partial scholarships. It's not like football and basketball where everybody's on a full ride. So some people are making a decision around, well, do I want my 15% partial scholarship or not? But to your point, there's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of funds that could be started. There's a lot of one-time scholarship enhancement programs that could be started. And is that what I kind of hear you saying, that, okay, well, let's gather the data. Let's see how many people this would even impact, right? Go out and ask the student athletes who would be interested in pursuing another year if they were given another year of eligibility since the season didn't occur, and then move from there around decision-making that would lead to some situations where, yeah, for 1 year, there might be more people on scholarship than typical, but then teams would adjust and go back to the normal in the next year. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, you're recruiting them to your school to for a number of reasons, but you know, one of them is that they're training for their sports, you know, so that, so not all the track and field athletes are there training for the Olympics, but certainly the top end people are. You know, not all baseball players are going to end up playing in the, you know, and are getting drafted into MLB, but they're there to prep, you know, for that career. So you're recruiting them to represent your school, and then they have their entire season stripped out from under them. You've got to have some way to be flexible.
I'm compensating them for the scholarship agreement that they've signed onto. Part of that agreement was that they would get training, coaching, and development for their career, the same way that a biology major is a pre-med who's getting trained to go to medical school. The baseball player who is on a path towards being drafted is training for his profession.
So if you're at one of these big schools that have incredible facilities and great coaches and contacts in the profession that you're looking to get into, it is it's a big loss, you know, and, you know, you mentioned earlier that things like, you know, the College World Series has already been canceled. I don't understand where that's coming from. It's a total knee-jerk reaction. I get that organizations like the NCAA and MLB and the NBA are in a really tough spot right now, because I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of how the government is responding to this thing, but the government is basically not responding, and so it's forcing organizations like the NCAA to make tough decisions. I get that. I get that these decisions are hard. I don't understand why you're canceling things in June when things are changing so rapidly on a day-to-day basis. That how can you, if this thing blows over in 3 weeks or a month, then that's plenty of time, you know, to get the season rolling and to have a College World Series. So why are you shutting this stuff down right now when there's zero downside to just waiting and making an informed decision a month from now or 2 months from, you know, whatever. So again, it goes back to my faith in the NCAA. The way that they're making decisions just seems, the standard cluster that we know the NCAA to be. I don't know what the solutions are. I think that I could probably come up with them and think that they're good, because, you know, we always want to think that we're right, but it seems like there's a lot better ways to handle it than it is currently being handled.
I don't know what the solutions are either. And I don't want people to take away from this podcast that I think that we have all the answers. I think honestly, just the opposite. I'm trying to ask questions, right? And we're trying to figure things out. What I do know is that in leadership, in decision making, that inclusiveness is generally the way to go. And that gathering as much data as possible is the way to go. And so when you tell me that the athletic directors and the conference commissioners haven't heard from the NCAA in weeks, I mean, that is not just absurd to me, that is malpractice. I mean, that we're talking about, that's fireable offense. And I agree. I feel like there are a whole lot of people of innocent bystanders here, and I'm not trying to suggest that there aren't people who have lives at risk with this virus. None of this is trying to suggest that the virus isn't a real threat to vulnerable populations, that it isn't something that is killing people in this country and around the world. That doesn't mean that you throw out the baby with the bathwater. And there are out of what appears to me to be out of touch old men making decisions about, you know, young people, 19, 20, 21 years old, that have significant ramifications for family and generational changing wealth, or even just for being able to pursue proper training and a degree, an education degree, because some of these folks may not be at the university if they're not there on a half scholarship for wrestling or you know, something for golf or something. That might be the reason why they're at the university. And to cancel the structure, the organization, to cancel the system in which they are currently operating in, without saying that we're going to give it a month and accumulate more data, make a decision, be inclusive with that decision-making process, reach out to the very people who are most impacted by the decisions and get their input. That is a significant concern to me, and one in which I unfortunately foresee some significant consequences and perhaps even accelerating the disbandment of the entire NCAA as we know it.
Yeah. This whole conversation is like, can we go back to talking about Trent Forrest or something?
Yeah.
You know, it's,
can we talk about whether we want Arkansas Little Rock or North Dakota State?
Right. Right. And we're going to be looking at this for weeks now, cause there are no sports and some, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, I don't watch TV. You know, I watch live sports. I don't go to movies. You know, it's like my hobby is sports and talking about sports and whatever. And there's a gazillion people out there just like me. And now we're kind of, you know, stuck having these kind of conversations, and it sucks. Everything about this whole thing sucks.
I think if your job was a equipment person to do the equipment for the College World Series or the Final Four or something, or think if your job was security at an arena or concessions or something like that, like think if that's how you put food on the table for your family.
Yeah, we have, and you know, in our Slack room, we have two guys who are already, you know, basically jobless because of this, and it's there are, I don't even know how to, you know what to say about the ramifications of this thing to real, you know, to real lives and real people, and we try to focus on the impacts on student athletes, because that's what that's what we're here to cover. But even once you start talking about student athletes, it all just kind of spirals, into these other topics. And it's not going to be a great time for sports fans, because there's no sports, you know? So now, now what do we all sit around talking about?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably as good a place to any to end it. So, you know, I don't know what our next podcast, I guess, who knows, maybe some of these decisions, we know that some of the things like the PGA and the NBA are just suspended. They are not canceled. So, you know, I think that I can certainly see a world in Michael in which you and I maybe turn this into a Tomahawk Nation golf dedicated podcast, or at least see if we can cover Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger and some other guys who went to Florida State and their progress in golf or in the NBA. I know we have some NBA or some Hamilton alums who are in the NBA and competing for the playoffs. So I certainly think we can cover some of that, but you know, yeah, maybe we do see if we can get some of the folks, like you mentioned, people in the Slack room who have been directly impacted by it, or get some student athletes on and see if we can, you know, get a little perspective into their mindset and what's going through in their decision-making. And as opposed to just, you know, speculating and making assumptions. But for now, I think this is where we will end it. The 2019-2020 Florida State basketball season is complete. The team finished fourth in the country as ranked by the Associated Press. They were the ACC regular season champs and were also named the ACC conference champions, and did get a berth into the NCAA. Before it was canceled, they were awarded the automatic berth. So they did qualify for the NCAA tournament for the fourth consecutive year, is probably how that's best phrased. For Michael, this is Matt signing off.